Vision statement, which is Canutio ISD is a premier school district with nationally ranked multi-literate graduate ready to excel in college, their careers, their community, and in life.
Thank you. Item number two, board honors, Ms. Liza Rodriguez, a recognition of campus lead custodians, District 1.
Before you get started, Ms. Rodriguez, I'd like to, Madam Chair, those of you who don't know me, my family, my whole family, my mom and dad were custodians or janitors for the school. And so I remember the bell used to ring and picking up all the extra milk that you guys leave and the fruit, all that was, we used to collect it, and that was our food the next day. So it came from very humble beginnings. But these individuals that you see in front of you, board, are what I call BMWs, because they believe in our kids, they believe in our community, they believe in keeping that building spotless. They're motivating. They motivate me every day. They motivate kids. BCE was our robotics lead over there with Miss Linda. I see you all every day. Northwest, getting the portables ready, all the way to Reyes, and again, thank you. But not only do they motivate, they're winners. And you all have a place in my heart, because I know how hard you work. I really do. I know what you guys do every day, and because I've done it, and I've done it with my family. I've seen my mom and dad do it, and all my brothers and sisters. So again, bless you, and thank you for all your work from the bottom of my heart.
Damián
I'm here today to give you my most humble thank you for the opportunity to become principal of Garcia, or to appoint me as principal and approve that position for Garcia Elementary. I just want to say that I remember a little over 2 years ago walking down the high school hallway and Dr. Galaviz looking at me, not knowing very much, very little, and he says, you know, you should be a principal, or have you ever considered that? And it never dawned on me, and I thought about it, and I said, why not, you know, and that's where it all started. And from there, I went to pursue that. So I just want you to know that I'm committed from the community. I have three children who are products of this wonderful district, and I really care deeply for the students, especially of Canutillo. So I'm gonna work hard, and you have my commitment and my dedication to the school. So thank you very much.
Our second speaker, Madam President, is Neil A. Navoa.
Hello. Thank you for having me here. Thank you for this opportunity. I'm Neil Navoa. I'm the new assistant principal at Canutillo High School. I am very grateful. Me and my family are very grateful for the opportunity to serve this community. What I appreciate about Conadillo is it is one of the last places in El Paso that is a community. A lot of places in El Paso are very transient, and there's lots of people moving around, but this is a community. I can't wait to serve the kids and serve the school. I also wanted to commend you all. I am a fine arts person. I was a middle school choir director for 8 years, so it shows, support on the side of the fine arts and a willingness to try something new in our district, because there's not too many of us out there who are fine arts people leading schools. So I appreciate the time, I appreciate the appointment, and I'll do my very best to serve this community and those kiddos. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Our third speaker is Tony Bravo.
Members of the board, Dr. Galvez, community members. I am one of the other new APs at Canadian High School, and I'm grateful for the opportunity to be part of this district, and I am very appreciative of the fact that how thorough of a job you all did in selecting not just me, but my counterpart, Neil. And as a parent, I do appreciate the time and effort that you all took in selecting us. I'm excited at pushing KUTO High School forward with advanced academics and taking care of as many of the students and parents as possible. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Speaker number four is Teresa Clapso.
Good evening, board, President Pitsy, Dr. Gondis, and board members. I just wanted to take this opportunity to, first of all, I haven't had a chance to come and thank you for your support with our graduation of the Don Haskins in June. It was a wild and crazy summer, 6 weeks after graduation, but I really thought it was a success. I really appreciate your support in that. I know sometimes trying something new can be difficult, but I think that everything went off very well, and I do, again, thank you and appreciate your support in letting us have that event there. Secondly, I'd like to thank y'all for trusting me and my recommendations and choices that myself and Dr. Galvez made in my two new APs. Very excited about them coming on board and everything that they have to offer KUTO High School, and I know that we're going to continue to move forward to improve our scores, to improve our achievement, and continue to be the great high school that we are. And lastly, I'd like to thank HR for all the hard work they've done in the last 4 weeks, helping the high school get all of our people in place. There was a time I called Lori on a Saturday, and she actually picked up the phone from my office. I'm like, what are you doing? She's like, I'm getting everything done. So she has worked very hard, and Ms. Martha Carrasco and her staff have worked very hard making sure that we got the people in place that we needed. And I just wanted to take a moment to thank everybody for all their efforts. And because all of that, we could not have started the year so successfully without everybody's hard work. So thank you, board, and thank you, HR, and Dr. Galvez and Dr. Behig. Thank you.
Number five, Ms. Liza Rodriguez, Public Information Officer. Hi, everyone. Just wanted to take this opportunity to thank you as well for giving me the opportunity to be your Public Information Officer. In just the short amount of time that I've been here, I've met amazing people, staff, students, community members. And I'm really excited to be a part of this team and behind this vision. So thank you.
Item number four, public hearing regarding the 2016-2017 property tax rate. The public is invited to attend and of course provide public comment. Ms. Comparison. A public hearing will be held regarding the 2016-2017 property tax rate.
Good evening, Board President.
Board President Fritzi, members of the board, Dr. Galaviz. In front of you, you have the slides for a short presentation on the tax rate. The public rate notice was placed in the courier earlier to announce this meeting. Just as a reminder, the fiscal 2017 budget was adopted on June 21st, 2016, and it was the rates that we're going to discuss tonight were the rates that were used in developing the budget.
Are there any questions on this item?
I do have one question, yes. What is our effective tax rate? Exactly what we're saying.
I'm sorry?
Is our effective tax rate what you presented to us?
This is the tax rate does not have a change. So the rollback rate is the same as the tax rate that we were proposing.
I understand. No other questions?
I do have a question, and of course this is revolves more around the budget and what the deficit would be under the effective tax rate.
Well, the budget that we passed was we're using $1.9 million as shown in your slides to balance the budget for 2017.
Okay. And we're first going to open it up to the public before we consider both motions, right? Because my position, first interest in sinking, which is approved by the taxpayers as a result of bond indebtedness, I'm okay with that, but I'm not okay with the M&O tax rate because of the budget side. That's all the question.
Any other questions or comments on this item?
I guess I have a point of clarification. We're not raising the tax rate. This is just so who's ever sitting in the room might understand. There'll be no raise in the tax rate. We're at the top we can raise it to due to the fact we had the TRE 7 years ago. We're not going any higher than we currently are and we do with what we have. Is that correct?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you very much.
So we're capped pretty much. That's
we're capped at $1.17.
Any other questions?
Is there any public comment? Item 1, consider approval of the 2016-2017 maintenance and operations tax rate 1.17 per 100 of valuation.
Madam Chair, I move to approve the 2016-17 maintenance and operation tax rate of $1.17 per $100 of valuation.
Second.
There is a motion and a second. Ms. Fritzi.
Yes.
Mrs. Gonzalez.
Yes.
Mr. Medina.
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana.
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez.
Yes.
Mrs. Searles.
Yes.
And Mrs. Iglesias.
Yes.
Motion passes. Item number 2, consider approval of the 2016-2017 interest and sinking fund tax rate 0.36 per 100 evaluation.
Second.
Madam Chair, I guess I'd just like to make another comment. This is, am I correct, actually a little lower than last year? Same?
It's exactly the same.
Okay. Exactly the same, so we haven't made it go up. Nothing's changed. We're making do with what we have, correct?
Making do with what we have, and we're using the refundings to bring down the payments.
Okay. Thank you very much. That's all. Thank you.
I'm sorry, who gave the second?
Missy Glasses.
Already there was a motion and a second. Ms. Fritzi.
Yes.
Mrs. Gonzalez.
Yes.
Mr. Medina.
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana.
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez.
Yes.
Mrs. Searles.
Yes.
And Mrs. Iglesias.
Yes.
Motion passes. Item number 3, consider approval of resolution which officially levies the tax rate for the 2016-2017 school year.
Madam Chair, I move to approve the resolution. Do I need to read it, Mr. Walker?
You should.
The resolution which reads, on this date be the Board of Trustees of the Kennedy Independent School District hereby levy or set the tax rate on $100 valuation for the district for the tax year of 2016 at a total tax rate of $1.53 to to be assessed and collected by the duly specified assessor and collector as follows: $1.17 for the purpose of maintenance and operation, and 36 cents for the purpose of payment of principal and interest on debts. Such taxes are to be assessed and collected by the tax officials designated by this district. The tax rate will raise more taxes for maintenance and operations than last year's tax rate. Adopted the 23rd day of August 2016. I move to approve.
I'll second that.
Okay, there's a motion and a second. Ms. Fritzi?
Yes.
Mrs. Gonzalez?
Yes.
Mr. Medina?
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mrs. Searles?
Yes.
And Mrs. Iglesias?
Yes.
Motion passes.
Thank you.
Item number five, Board of Trustee Business A, report regarding the TASB 2016 Summer Leadership Institute Conference. Mrs. Searles?
Madam Chair, I see that we have students here in the audience, and I'd like to ask, I'm taking a guess by their FFA jackets, that they're here on item 7E, which is the Career and Technology Farm. And I'd like to ask the board if we could move that item 7E up in front of my report, so that they could get home and get to sleep tonight, go to school in the morning.
Okay, and right after that, Ms. Searles, we'll go ahead and go to 5B because we have the person waiting for that as well. Is there anything else that the board needs to know about?
Okay, item 7E. Discussion and possible action regarding the procurement method for the CTE barn.
Bruno Vasquez and Mrs. Campbell. Good evening, Mr. Chief, Board of Trustees, Dr. Galavis. At the request of the board, administration has been working on the procurement process for the CTE barn. We have made some steps forward, but at the advice of legal, we have been advised that we have to present to you the options for the procurement process. And what we are recommending is that we go with a design build delivery method for this project. That way we can secure proper bids from contractors and provide you all with a final price that you at that point can analyze and determine if it's feasible or not for construction.
Madam Chair, I have a couple more questions. Was that it?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Well, thank you for doing the research and coming back to us. That's one of the things that we needed to figure out, and at least now we know we could go forward. And so what administration is recommending is a design build in comparison to...
In comparison to construction management at risk or design bid build, those two... Design bid build will only prolong the process for us, and because of the nature of this particular project, we're looking at a prefabricated metal structure. This is something that it's done, you know, in the industry throughout. So it's the best delivery method for the district. It will give you the best value, and it will be the shortest amount of time.
Okay. With that being said, I'll move on. Administration's recommendation to go with the procurement process of design build, and then at that point you would come back to us in regards to project and price and all that, right?
Yes.
That is correct.
Okay. That's my
question. Question.
Go ahead, Mr. Medina.
Funding source for this?
We have not identified a funding source for this project yet.
The funding source, Mr. Medina, would be the fund balance.
Not necessarily.
Well, I mean, right now, that's what we're looking at.
So there's no identified source other than our own bank account?
Yes, sir.
I thought the process was you all were going to go look at it. You couldn't look at it in regards to because you didn't have the procurement process.
Yes. That's correct.
With this decision, it will let you go into looking at and then coming back to us with the cost analysis.
Not just a cost analysis, but actually a hard bid that we will get from a contractor, and that will be binding to them so that they can provide the service for us at whatever amount that comes out to.
Okay.
And you'll be able to see the whole evaluation as to, you know, how we scored it you'll be able to see all the vendors that responded and how they came in as far as the ranking.
Okay.
How much is currently in our fund balance?
I don't have that information.
How much is in our fund balance?
My concern is that we're identifying a source, though money's behind it, nothing other than we hope to go after fund balance. And
this sheet says $55 million.
That might not be the option.
That's what it says right here. In our general fund, $55,497.17.
That might not be the option of the board. I mean, we could wait till the budget year, but there's other options.
Okay.
Or the current bond program that has savings, we can look at that too. So we're not looking at funding sources. The agenda mm-hmm. item right now is for
just the
procurement.
No, second that.
And I do understand that we're only talking about procurement sources, but your next step is to come back with actual hard bids that are binding to the district. So at this point, it sounds as if we're going into actually deciding on building a barn. Is that
just
correct?
Just a clarification. When we come back to the board with a hard number, you at that point have the opportunity to vote on it, yea or nay. We're not obligated, once we receive those bids, we're not obligated to sign any contract with anybody. And we won't unless we get your approval.
Was the barn at this location identified in the facilities assessment?
The barn was not identified in the facilities assessment.
Thank you. That's all my questions.
We have a motion and a second from Ms. Gonzalez. Ms. Sonia?
Ms. Fritzy?
No.
Mrs. Gonzalez?
Yes.
Mr. Medina?
No.
Mrs. Quintana?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mrs. Searles?
Yes.
And Mrs. Iglesias?
Yes.
Motion passes. Madam President, we'll go now to 5, Board of Trustees Business. B, discussion and possible action regarding the Student Voter Education Initiative Committee. Ms. Perez?
Is this laptop connected to this screen? Can I get everything in?
Where's Andrew?
Mr. Perez?
Screen for a tab.
Andrew?
It's a question about technology.
What do you think this is a stream?
There's Tony.
Prices for police officers and rentals and things like that may have gone up.
a little bit, but the main thing that I point you to is on page 3, where it says summary of cost, and this again was of the 2015 graduation, which was approximately about $25,000. And when we look at what we paid for the John Haskins, it was $11,806.29, with on page 4 a savings of approximately $9,400, $9,356.66 to be exact. And at this point, one of the things that we've been working with Coach Brooks and I and facilities is the condition of our field. Our field's not in good condition. It's they've come in and even said that we need to add some of that tire rubber to it, because the boys are basically, when they hit, yes, it's supposed to be hard, but it's also supposed to give a little. There's little to no give left in that field. And it does pose dangers to the students in the sense of injuries that could occur. Now, Coach Brooks has been working with Mr. Vasquez since he came on board, and they've been, since the springtime, looking at costs and how much it would cost to repair, do the repairs that the field needs, and resurface what needs to be done. We've also, at the high school, are now not allowing the students to go onto the fields in the morning or at lunch in order to limit how much the field is being used, so that it's only used during practices and for games. So having the stage there, having the chairs on there, having the audio equipment being pulled across there, there is quite a bit of wear and tear that the field and the track have sustained. So, and one of the nice things about the John Haskins is we literally walked in and walked out. That's all we did. And it was very helpful. Go ahead.
Go ahead, Ms.
Ms. Clapsaddle, yes, by signing a 3-year agreement, are we tied to use it for the next 3 years?
For 3 years, yes, sir.
Minimum 3 years.
Minimum 3 years. Correct, because we can sign a 3-year or 5-year. And by signing a 3-year, it puts us into the rotation, is what Ricky calls it, so that we can get dibs on the graduation dates. Doing it a year by year, we kind of pretty much get whatever's left over after EPISD and YISD and these other districts go in and pick their dates. We have asked him to kind of help us out, but he's also tied by agreements and contract agreements that he has to, procedures he has to follow to.
If we choose not to follow or not to use the Don Haskins, are we required to pay if we don't use it?
I don't know what the cancellation is. Did you? I don't see
not cancellation, it's just not used. This year we use it, following year we decide to go somewhere else.
There is the $800.
$800,
yeah, security. Yes, sir. So one of the things that I do want to bring to light is that we do have a way of negotiating that price. We've actually pushed in that price, the $45,000, only just in case within the 3 years we do see some costs that are escalated, you know, such as software, such as, you know, now we have a bigger graduating class, so now they have to hire an additional security guard. Let me remind you, another thing is that within the sample contract that you have is what's called a TULIP. That's a liability insurance that Don Haskins wants to give us, but we waive that. We already come in with our own liability insurance, so that's another $1,400 savings that we're coming into.
So the contract's $45,000 for 3 years.
For the entire contract. Yes, the entire.
And that's their price. That's not our price.
That's the price that we set, but we cushioned it a little. I talked to Dr. Galavis about this. I mean, you're looking at about $12,000 per year, but we cushioned it a little just in case you have those escalated costs.
I guess the concern is if you're at 45, why not just go to 50 to give you that much extra room in case we do have any extraneous concerns. I guess that'd be my only suggestion.
Okay. We're still working with Don Haskins, just so you know. We'll continue working with
him. Yeah, I think the graduation was a success. We came in, we left, it wasn't hot.
It wasn't hot. And we didn't have to take anybody away in ambulances
That's
like
right.
we did last year.
Madam Chair?
Go ahead.
My question is, will it freeze some of the prices since we're getting a 3-year deal to pay?
Yes, it will. But we still are able to negotiate, just so you'll know. If we want to add more equipment, then that cushion money will allow that. We won't have to come back to you.
But if we stay with the same set plan, then Nothing changes.
Nothing changes, yes, ma'am.
Even if prices might go up, it
yes.
stays the same
it
for
stays
us.
The same.
So
yes.
it freezes that
yes.
for the reason.
Yes.
That's what I have.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Rodriguez, did you have a question?
Just, I think one of the other issues that were sort of subliminal that means something is that it's at a university, and so it's sort of bringing that pipeline, saying, okay, you've graduated, and hopefully the long term, what I want to look at, not this year, and I was looking, thought I was supposed to, it's probably on consent, as long term, Dr. Galavis says, hopefully we can have both. I know this year will probably be a time crunch, but next year hopefully we can look at maybe the McGoffin Auditorium for our niches.
Yes, sir. We are looking at that. We asked for some information from the McGoffin Center. We haven't received it, so it will come in September for the Northwest Early College.
So with that, I'll make a motion.
Wait,
to
back one more question.
Go ahead, sir.
If we say yes to this, we're given a date. Okay, you're going to come on June the 10th. I don't know if that's a date. So we're going to come on June the 10th. How many hours do we get on June the 10th?
Just like we did this year, 2 hours, and we did finish in the time frame. And they do cushion it a little bit. There's usually, we were the very last high school to graduate this year. And we finished a little after 8, and I even told Ricky, I said, we went to see, he goes, no, you're fine. They always build in extra time in there.
What I'm wondering is for, you know, a little extra, do we ask them, could we do Northwest Early College, either before or after, you know, wrap it all up in one day, do it all at John Haskins, because it sounds to me like Abraham Chavez is going to be non-existent. That they're going to knock that down and build the Mexican American Cultural Center.
They're not knocking it down.
They'll renovate it. Yeah. But I don't think that they're going to, you know, be having graduations there is going to be my guess. And so I'm wondering, is that a possibility that...
I think that's a negotiation. Once this is approved, now we can go back and say you're using the Haskins. Give us a good price on that.
No, it's McGoffin.
McGoffin. McGoffin.
It's auditorium, actually.
Yeah. It's a theater. McGoffin Theater.
Theater.
And the last page I did propose some, these are the proposed graduation dates that you did already submit to Ricky pending approval, just so it could kind of get on the radar with him. And we are asking for the 6 o'clock slot because it worked fantastically. Coming back to the high school and having project celebration at the high school. That was the neatest experience, and the kids had a ball, the adults had a ball, and we're going to aim to make it even bigger this year. So we had a great time. One of the kids, we announced some ice cream at the end, and the kid goes, really? I can't eat another bite. You're killing us. So we had so much fun. At Project Celebration, he gave away a lot of good, neat things to the kids, and they had a blast. So we're very excited for that as well this year.
One last question.
Go ahead, Mr. Levine.
Any feedback from the parents themselves? The date, the time. Was there any negative feedback, or was it all positive?
All the feedback that I got, because I was greeting parents as they were dropping their kids off at Project Celebration in the parking lot that evening, was all positive. Thank you, this is great. We love having this here at the high school piece. We loved having the graduation of the John Haskins, and we got a lot of positive feedback. I do know that based on the numbers that Ricky kind of shared with us, we had the largest crowd in attendance for any graduation. Short of like El Dorado and these places that graduate
like
900
stadium
in the facility. We had, for a school our size, we had the largest crowd when you look at other schools that are in comparison to our graduation size of our class. And we did have 425 after graduation, 6 after graduation this summer that did graduate. So we were well over 90% graduation rate this year. So we're very excited about that as well.
Any
but lots of positive feedback. I'm sure there were some people that weren't happy, but they never got to me.
Yay.
So all I heard was positive.
Any other questions, comments? So, is there a motion?
No.
Sorry, we have a first and a second?
No, no, no.
I'm sorry, who gave the first?
I was going with the administration's recommendation to go with the 3-year contract as presented.
Second.
Ms. Fritzi?
Yes.
Mrs. Gonzalez?
Yes.
Mr. Medina?
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mrs. Cerro?
Yes.
And Mrs. Iglesias?
Yes.
Motion passes.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Paz.
Madam President, are we going to go to 5B?
Yes, we are.
Discussion of possible action regarding the Student Voter Education Initiative, reading with Ms. Bettis.
Thank you
for being patient.
Oh, well, thank you for accommodating and everybody working so nice. It just, I'll sit in the back until everything's ready, no problem. And the code is here, and then the link is there also.
And so the second reason that we put this website together is a support tool for high school administrators. Rather than asking them, are you in compliance, we're going to present this to them and say, let us help you be in compliance without adding any extra work to your day or to your year. Organizations like Senate District 29, which is Jose Rodriguez, El Paso County Elections Department, National Council La Raza, Southwest Voter Education Registration Project, all come to schools at no charge, simple phone call of coordination, to register all eligible students based on their birth date. This is something that can be done at lunchtime, before school, after school, etc., and you check your compliance box that you have done everything that you're required to do. I know that Senator Jose Rodriguez's office did a student voter initiative last year, and that the result of that was an additional, I want to say over 5,000 students. Not only were they registered, but those actually went and voted, right? And so the component that I add to this, because our offices work in collaboration, but I do not work for Senator Rodriguez, the component that I believe is missing is when you turn 18, I don't believe that your thought process automatically goes to, yay, I can vote, right? I don't think 18-year-olds think like that, but they should, because it is a very powerful right that they have, and unfortunately, we don't teach civics courses in all of our high schools anymore. So this is a tool that helps our educators develop civics all the way from pre-K through 12th grade. So that way when they do turn 18, voting is a part of life, just like going to school, just like paying bills, just like walking, just like breathing. Participating in a democratic society is of the utmost importance to us every day, but particularly right now. So what we are proposing to Canutillo ISD is to not only continue with the voter registration initiative, but preparing our students for civic engagement using the same efforts that we prepare our students for college and career. When students know who they're voting for, why they're voting, why voting is important, it adds a component that is probably missing. When you turn 18, if you're not thinking about voting, you're probably not vetting candidates, you're probably not aware of which elections you can participate in, particularly where you can vote, when to vote, things like this. So if we were to expand our student council at our high schools, who are already elected members of the school body, and offer them service hours from the state level that could be added to their college portfolios, because they would be then, if they so chose, to organize candidate forums, organize candidate debates, bring in the candidates from every possible election in that feeder pattern, in that community, and mediate our candidates and bring in our community back into our schools, which is also part of the A through F ranking system that is now part of compliance through TEA. But that is what we are proposing, and that is what I'm here to speak to you about. Any questions that you have, and hopefully this is something that, because it doesn't take time from instruction and it doesn't cost any money, and it is a tool to keep our educators and principals in compliance, and hopefully you have a lot of questions, and hopefully that ends with your support and an invitation to your high school. Thank you.
Any questions or comments from Ms. Lewis?
So you're selling all the upside, there's no downside?
I can't imagine a downside to increased civic engagement and having more of our electorate participating in voting, not only registration, but actual voting. I personally, no, I don't see a downside to that.
Is there a term that we must initially agree to, or is this just month to month? It's a week, just, but I mean, is it yearly? Are we committed to more than just a one-time effort?
Well, by law, educators are obligated to teach these components, and by law, principals are obligated to register students at least twice a year. But as far as my office, there is no term, there is no agreement, there is no start date, there is no end date, there is nothing. It's completely voluntarily.
So,
thank you.
Madam Chair, with that, I would like to move that the Canutillo School District make sure that we recognize Student Voter Education Initiative of Freedom Week.
Second.
We have a motion from Ms. Earls and a second from Mr. Medina.
I just want to congratulate you first, State Board of Education member-elect. Thank you for coming out to Ganotillo. I know it's a drive, but I know you're working this whole region and making sure you're a public advocate for public education. So thank you. And I think it's a great opportunity to just not only implement it, but grow from it and hopefully do more in the long term. So thank you.
There was a motion and a second. Ms. Fritzi.
Yes.
Mrs. Gonzalez.
Yes.
Mr. Medina.
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana.
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez.
Yes.
Mrs. Searles.
Of course. Yes.
And Mrs. Iglesias.
Yes.
Motion passes.
Thank you. May we suspend the rules just for a second to show our gratitude to Ms.
Oh, wow. What exactly does that mean? Do we get like the guys at the front? That was so cool. Thank you so much. Oh, great.
Thank you so much for the invitation. Being able to receive an invitation to school, thank you, so nice to meet you too. An invitation to schools and to work with students is well, obviously my favorite thing. It's so nice to meet you. Well, you know, there's that compliance tool too, right? Hello, nice to meet you, thank you so much. Yeah, she's my favorite person tonight, right? Thank you so much, thank you for the question too. Dr. Donabese, did you have a next item that you need?
Did you want to say anything?
Madam President, are we going to 5A?
Yes.
Tad, some leadership.
I think we had 7. I'm sorry, I'm waiting for Dr. Donabese. 7B.
Let me read the item, but then there's a caveat. 7B under new business?
Yes, ma'am.
So discussion of possible action regarding health plan updates and forecast recommendation for 2017 grade increase in plan design. I know that I guess additional legal advice will be provided during closed session.
Discuss the finances of the self-funded group health plan. And
And in February, the board approved a recommendation to increase the district's contribution to the plan by $164 per employee per month, effective with the start of the fiscal year, which was July 1st. What we have is claims data embedded in our forecasting and our presentation through the month of July, which is the most recent claims data that's available. And to skip ahead, it's not as dire as it was looking back in February. So there have been some improvements in the performance of the plan, which is always welcome news. Page number three, and the page that's on the screen at this time, is a table of metrics that shows year-to-date paid claims for this year as well as the last three calendar years. And the right-hand side is the side of the presentation that I look at the most, which tracks the average cost per covered individual or per member per month. And you see PMPM several times throughout the presentation. And that's just a way to track the average cost of the claims, which is the biggest part of the cost of your program on a per unit basis. On page four, we've got a bar chart showing the claims paid by month through the month of July. And you can see, starting back in February, there were some spikes, but there were also some declines during April and May. Summer months are generally a little bit heavier claims expense for most school districts as employees and dependents try to time any type of elective procedures during the months where they're off. On page number five, we chart the moving average cost by relationship of your employees. And so you can see the employees are the blue chart. And that's the most stable line. It has the most number of members in it. You can see the spouses, they're the higher light blue shaded chart or bar chart. And children are down near the bottom in the green. And like I mentioned to the committee last week as well, in looking at your claims expense, the average cost per covered individual is really not out of line with what we see in other school districts or even other employer groups in the El Paso area or even across the state of Texas or in some of the surrounding states as well. So, you know, the part of the challenges we've been dealing with is not so much that the claims expense are out of line compared to your peer groups, but the funding level hadn't been changed much in the past. And I think with regards to that, too, there should be an additional handout, and I can put that on the screen later, to show you that actually the Canyatillo School District has enjoyed really favorable utilization and contribution rates for the last 5 years in terms of what employees have paid. There's been very little change, just one change 3 years ago in terms of program reductions. Now, the district has increased its contribution periodically over that point, over that time period. But overall, the benefits haven't changed at all since 2010, and payroll deductions for employees have held very constant compared to other groups.
Randy, I did provide the historical deductions to the board, so they have those copies.
That in January of 2014 to 409, which was a marginal increase. That was also the first year in the 3 years where deductions changed by about 8% across the board for employees. But you can see in 2011, 12, and 13, they held constant. Then an 8% increase in 2014, and they've held constant ever since then as well, which is a pretty remarkable track record compared to other school districts and even other employers in the county. course, in 2015, we increased the district's contribution by $50 per month, but that started at the beginning of the fiscal year in July. So the plan year runs on a calendar year basis, but of course, your fiscal year runs July through June. So in July of 2015, the district increased its contribution by $50. And then, as I mentioned earlier, July of 2016, you increased it by another $164. So you can see, overall, in terms of the employee's perspective, it's been very stable in terms of benefits and very stable in terms of payroll deductions. Going back to the presentation, page 6 just kind of gives you a bar chart of overall combined medical and prescription drug costs by year, going all the way back to 2010. And you can see that, again, it's fairly stable until 2015 and 2016. And because of that stability in benefits and rates, on page number 7, you can also see the historical enrollment by the different plans that are offered. So there's 4 plans that are currently offered to employees. 2 of them at no cost to employees, that being the consumer-driven health plan and the basic plan. You can see the standard plan is the one that attracts the highest level of enrollment by employees. And then the premium plan, which we've had discussions about in the past, which is the richest level of benefits and also at the highest level of payroll deductions. It's held also pretty steady over time. It actually increased in enrollment for a couple of years, but currently average enrollment in the premium plan right now is 136 employees here today. On page number 8, this is the slide that we had a lot of discussion about at our prior meetings as well. This tracks your utilization by member, moving average per month by the plan that they're in. And the bar chart that's in the middle, shaded blue, is the average cost of all plans combined. You can see that both the consumer-driven health plan and the basic plan, in terms of value and cost, are running about equal in average cost per member. In fact, the payroll deductions for those 2 plans are identical. So members make their decision on whether to choose either the consumer-driven health plan or the basic plan, really based on the plan design, because their payroll deductions are identical between the two. And so in terms of, in the industry, what they call actuarial value or minimum value, et cetera, they're pretty equal in terms of value, in terms of how the plan replaces your expenses in terms of payment after your cost-sharing expense. However, the premium plan, as you can see, the green line at the top, historically has had higher levels of cost. Part of that's just a mathematical phenomenon. With just 136 employees, it tends to attract people with higher chronic conditions, and as a result of that, they tend to use the plan more. But as we've mentioned in the past, the average cost of utilization of that plan is nearly double the average of the group as a whole. On page number 9, we've got just a comparison of contributions as a percentage of the total contributions. And contributions, some people might think of those as premiums that are paid. So this reflects both the district's contribution and payroll deductions from employees that are enrolled in each of the different plans. It gives you a ratio how the contributions compare to the claims expense. So as we've seen over the years, the premium plan consumes about 25% of all expenses, but contributions tied to that plan account for about 17% of the total. The standard plan is pretty close. It's 64 expenses versus 60 in contributions. And the basic plan, the consumer-driven plan, had higher levels of contributions than claims expense. You're also tracking your large claims data. And so far through July, you've only had 2 claimants exceed your reinsurance deductible. In prior years, you've had 6 or 7 or 8, depending on the luck of the draw. I can tell you that in the month of August, and we received your detailed claims data about the 15th of the month in arrears. So we'll see the detailed claims data for the month of August around September the 15th. But we do get notices at HUB as well as at the district. Anytime there's a large claim that's being paid out, a large claim being one greater than $50,000, Blue Cross sends an advance notice to you to alert you to the fact that there's some large claims that are occurring. And we've received a notice each of the last 2 weeks. Now, the claim, you know, the reason that we
buy me insurance is to protect the plant from a catastrophic loss. The new claimant is in excess of the deductible, which means all claims incurred on that person going forward are now paid by Blue Cross. The district's through paying for it. But in the next month, you'll see another person or another claimant on that list. We don't have the total details. We just get a little blast each time a new claim comes through. Page number 11 just gives some basic statistics on the prescription drug program utilization. And what we're noticing, not only at KUTOISD, but employer groups across the region, is that prescription drug expenses are starting to increase at a faster rate than medical expense. And we see those now increasing at about a pace of 9% to 11% on average across the book of business that we review, which is right in line with what KUTOISD is experiencing right now.
Sir, I have a question as far as our prescriptions. For example, I did see that some insurances, if you're going to use a prescription for more than 3 months, they ask you to do the mail-in, and it's a lot cheaper to the person filling the prescription, and it's a lot cheaper to us on our end as well. Do we have that?
Yes,
that available?
Actually, your program, actually, your benefits that you offer here are very good in comparison to what other plan sponsors are offering these days. So you, historically, for the last 6 years now, the program here has a copay for generic drugs, preferred brand drugs, and non-preferred brand drugs at a retail supply level, where one copay buys you a 30-day supply of drugs. If the member chooses to access the mail order option, which you have available, then you get a 90-day supply of drugs for only two copays. So it's designed to incentivize people to use the mail order program, because if you're consuming a maintenance drug for an entire year, you would save four copays a year by using the mail order. A lot of plans have switched to say it's the same, it's three times the copay for a 90-day supply. So when you're looking at plans on the health insurance exchange or most fully insured plans, there's no financial incentive to go to the mail order. What some employers are doing and what some fully insured plans are doing is implementing what's called a mandatory mail order requirement, which means that if you're taking one of those drugs, you can only purchase it through the mail order. So at KUTO, we haven't invoked that rule, but we give a financial incentive for people to go in that direction.
I think it would be a very good idea, especially if they know something that they're going to use for 3 months or more, such as like allergy medication, but it's a lot cheaper when they do the mail order, and it's automatically deducted and sent out a lot quicker.
True.
And that is something that we've done as far as informing the staff of those options. And that was done through open enrollment and questions when they come to our office. So, it's a matter of us marketing that and, continuing to market that option so that employees are well informed and can take advantage of those options.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
I have a question. There's no deductible, correct, for the prescriptions?
On every plan except the consumer-driven health plan, there's no deductible applied before you can use the copay. The consumer-driven health plan, by design, requires that any drug that's not considered a preventive drug has to be subject to the deductible.
Right. And I think we have, I'm just going to say this, because I repeat this year after year. I know that the surrounding district, they have a deductible. For prescriptions, regardless whatever plan you have. So
a lot of plans are implementing a deductible on brand drugs, not generic drugs, because generic drugs are lower in cost.
No, this is the surrounding district is as a whole, they have a deductible.
Most commonly I see anywhere from like a $100 to $150 deductible before your copay kicks in.
Correct.
Yes. That is correct.
Yeah. You have it too?
Yeah. Page number 13, this is just to refresh your memory. This is the forecast page from back in February when we were having the discussion on the approval of increasing the district's contribution to the $164 threshold. And back at that point in time, we were trying to forecast what we thought expenses would be for the remainder of 2016, as well as looking forward through the 2017 plan year, which would stretch through December of 2017. And so at that time, all of the data was calling for, even after your $164 increase in contributions, that there might be a need to increase funding or make plan design changes to alleviate that red number in the lower right-hand column, the $1.3 million, which was like an additional 16% increase. So that was the scenario that we were looking at back in February. Based on the existing plan designs and the existing contribution, including the district's increase in its contribution, at this point in time, looking forward, it's much better than it was back in February. That $1.3 million number is now down to $484,000, and that's because of some of your favorable claims experience back in March through April and May. So now the issue is, part of the reason for the increase in the funding was to restore the fund balance for the plan. So at the start of your fiscal year, your health fund balance, we predicted it would be near zero, and it was actually about $125,000 in the negative on July 1. Now on July 1, the new infusion of contributions was starting to kick in, and that's already helping to alleviate the financial pressure on the plan. Our recommendation for your group would be that you maintain a reserve balance, kind of like you have your reserve for your general fund, etc. And the target for the reserve balance would be to accumulate $1.5 million to make sure that you have adequate resources to accommodate fluctuations in expenses as you move through the year, and also to have an established reserve balance from an accounting perspective to show that you have the assets set aside to cover liabilities that are incurred but not yet paid. The nature of the beast of health insurance claims are that you could incur the claim, but it may not move through the system and materialize as a paid expense for up to 60 days. So this is about a little over 2 months of claims paying capability at $1.5 million. Our projections right now for going through 2017 is if we made no additional changes on January 1, held everything constant, then what would most likely happen is that your enrollment would stay constant within the plan because, again, employees would perceive no change. So just like that enrollment chart that we looked at before would stay constant and there was no change in deductions, it would likely stay constant again. If that were to transpire, then we think you'd be about $484,000 shy of your target of $1.5 million. So our projection would be that at the end of 2017, instead of on July 1 of 2015, when you were negative $125,000, we would predict that you have about $1 million set aside, which is a great accomplishment. And at this point, it's due only to the improved claims experience and the increased contribution from the district. So a much better scenario than we were looking at back in February. So with the objective to restore the fund balance, I have to give your insurance committee a lot of credit, and I told them this as well when we met, is a lot of times in discussions like this, there's tough decisions to be made, and your committee understood, they greatly appreciate the district's increase in the contribution, that goes without saying. But the other objective was too, that we want to get into a situation, we think the school district has done enough, you've got a lot of demands on your resources in terms of things that you need to do to operate the school district. So our objective is we would like to not have to come back to you next year, and even not until the end of December, to talk about what's in store for 2018. So they were making some, we created two different plan design options, one of which, option one, which is on the screen right now, we discussed back in February, which was to give consideration to eliminating the premium plan altogether. And so here in this grid here, you can see a quick summary of the benefits. You can see what the current payroll deductions are. And then under this option, what was being proposed and what the committee considered. So you can also see there, too, that the prescription drug benefit is pretty consistent across the board. So in the first three plans, the consumer-driven basic and standard, those are great co-pays for prescription drug coverage. $10 for generic and a 30-day supply, $30 for a brand, preferred brand name, or $50 for non-preferred. The premium plan, because it costs more for employees, has slightly lower copays, but those are great options there. And then you can see, too, for the mail order, it's just double the copay if you want the 90-day supply. So under option number one, essentially what's happening, and when we were here back in February, the committee had come forth and recommended reducing benefits and increasing payroll deductions. So we had, each of the plans had higher deductibles, higher co-pays, higher out-of-pocket maximums. At this stage of the game, where this scenario says the benefits could stay constant with what they are right now, but this scenario includes an increase in contributions for the basic and the standard plan by $50 per employee, regardless of whether you have single, spouse, child, or family coverage. We did increase the payroll deductions for the consumer-driven health plan, and part of that strategy is a lot of employers are trying to incentivize employees to move in that direction because it promotes consumerism and wiser choice when it comes to deciding where you want to have your health care done and what types of services you want to see. Under option number one, the premium plan, as was discussed back in February, was proposed to be eliminated so that there would be three choices going forward. So there was a lot of discussion with the committee, too, where we created a second option, which would involve keeping the premium plan. Because it is a great plan, there's nobody in the area that offers a $100 deductible anymore or a $2,000 out-of-pocket maximum with the co-pays that you have. So option number two is everything from option number one, except that we keep the premium plan and we increase the deductions on each of the tiered categories there by $100 per month per employee. And this is where I rarely see anything like this happen. But some of your committee members actually asked if they should increase the rates more. Rarely go into a meeting where the employees say, would you increase my rate more? I think that these rates or these options here would be sufficient if you choose to keep the premium plan. And after a lot of discussion with your committee, this is the option that they recommended for consideration by the board. But I talked about raising the rates higher than the 50. I think for anybody who's been here before, it's probably the fastest I've given the presentation. But I'm happy to answer any questions or go back and show you any of the other reports that we've just made.
So just to recap, the committee is moving forward or is wanting you to present, or wanting us to present option two as the selected option for administration.
Mm-hmm. And these changes would be effective on January the 1st.
Any questions or comments?
Yep.
Go ahead.
Randy, thank you. At the meeting last week, I did ask the question regarding what the other districts are, on average, contributing to their overall. Mm-hmm. For example, here in KMTU, we're about a 6% on average. If you take all our employees only, forget spouses, forget children, whatnot, we're at about a 6%, meaning our employees contribute 6% to their health care. District kicks in the rest of 94%. What's the average for EPISD, YISD, and Socorro?
Well, it varies by district, and I wouldn't say there's a prevailing average, mm-hmm. but I would say overall that it's probably close to 80% from the employer side, 20% from the district side. Now, EPISD would be an anomaly because they're part of the TRS Active Care, and the rates are pretty high, which makes the payroll deductions pretty high. They're probably closer to a 75-25 split there. So I don't know if we did generate a comparison of a lot of different employer groups that we sent over to that has not only the district's contribution, but the payroll deductions as well as the benefits. And that's about a 7-page document. But I do have that if you want to look at that on the screen as well.
I just think what we need to do is, you know, obviously our employees are not only asking to contribute, as was evident in that committee meeting, but also the concern is that we also are fiscally responsible and not just continue to have zero payment plans, because even the consumer-driven health plan, which is at a cost of zero to our employees, we are still putting out per month $623, which in just a few years, gone up 65% in the district's contribution. Employees, their increase has only been 8%. There's a disparity, and I think the good thing is that the employees recognize that, and that was evident. I guess the concern is now is educating the employees to can to let them know how essentially how good the plan really is when we have these discussions that it's imperative that they come out and contribute. But I do think we need to sort of, we look at wages across the districts. I don't think it's unfair to look at healthcare across the districts because we're in the same environment. In fact, our employees are out there going to the same doctors as you know, other employees. So I think it's fair enough to just see the lay of the land. That's really what I'd like to see.
So actually right now, prior to the increase of the district's contribution, the sum of all contributions from employees for themselves or dependents is about 24%. So you're closer to 76-24 as it stands right now. But that's combining dependents as well as employees.
And I understand that because when you talk about you know employees, how they're I'm only looking at straight employees. Because really, that's what we're here for is our employees as well as their families. But the families, if you notice the difference in their premiums, is significant. They're not paying $38 a month for essentially a Cadillac type of health care. They are paying significant amounts more for spouse, children, and family. So again, I just want to just keep a pulse on the market and see, you know, how really good we're treating our employees and communicate that effectively. Let them know, look, we believe in providing health care and keeping our employees healthy. And here's the reality. Other school districts, they're, I really believe it's more than 30-40 than really 20 because it's evident even in DPISD, from what I understand, they get a raise just to cover their health care. And we don't want to go down that path. So I really think we need to start looking at the landscape at the districts as a whole because we do that all the time with TASB, with wages, with benefits, and I think this is another one that we need to have that information to make those important decisions.
Well, and I would agree because I think you have to look at your total compensation package and find a happy medium and a balance.
Right.
One of the things is that when you change payroll deductions, you're basically impacting everybody whether they use the plan or not. If there's a shift in the payroll deductions to put more responsibility on the member, then they'll start to move towards a lower cost plan, which has higher out-of-pocket expense. Mm-hmm. And that shifts costs to the people that are the higher field advisors.
Madam Chair.
Which is
thank you,
kind
thank
of what you're doing.
Thank
with
you for the information, but I know that this information was given to us a while back that we needed to do something about.
Yes. So
this has been coming for a while. And Ms. Gonzalez and I, we already knew. We've lived it. And there have been comparisons from other districts. People know that the insurance is expensive. They do. And I know that people were already willing to pay that price since you first brought it up. So, and here we are.
And of course, Mr. Mayan is correct. I mean, looking at data, comparing, I mean, that's an ongoing process that we need to continuously do. And at this point in time, based on what the health committee decided, I'm bringing forth to seek approval from the board for approval for that option two, so that we can move forward. These amounts that you see here, as far as the contributions on behalf of the employees, will not take effect until January 2017. The amounts that you see here are going to be paid in two payments. For example, the proposal for the standard plan, which is moving from $38 to $88, it'll be in two payments. On the basic plan, the $50, that'll be $25 per paycheck on the employee side. So in reality, the amounts that we're proposing to increase are conservative. I think they're reasonable. I think all the employees understand that the cost of health care is rising and that that we're being very conservative and reasonable in the recommendations.
And I think they understand that they have a very good insurance compared to everyone around us. I think that's very clear. I do think that.
Madam Chair, if I might.
Go ahead. Are you done?
Mr. Rosal,
yes,
ladies first. Go ahead.
I was just going to move to approve.
No, I was going to ask two questions. One, There was supposed to be a decision that was made last year, well, recommendation that we went after against administration. What would have that number looked at in regards to the money being put back into our fund balance, our health?
What? I'm sorry, which?
You know what I'm talking
yes,
about.
Yes, we had recommended an increase of $20 last year, and because there were no raises given, that recommendation that was made was not approved.
But,
so there was no increase at all.
Well, and that's the case, is the staff was willing at that time as well.
Yes,
they
were.
They were.
They were.
So I would just like to see how much that would have increased over the year. And then maybe, so if you could just get back with us.
I can tell you right now. Had we done the $20 increase on January 1, that would have added about $255,000 to the fund at this point in time already. So then instead of being $484,000 off, it's $200,000, I'm sorry, it's $200,000 in a year.
But that compounded, right? Would it? So we would be 105 to the goal that we need for our fund balance?
If we had done the 20, we'd be plus 200 by the end of this year, another 200, which would be $80,000.
So yeah, I thought it was going to be less. The other question that I had, do we have anything in regards to stop loss that might be catching up to that? That might.
Do we have anything that's what?
At the stop loss? That might reach that portion.
We do. We have. Well, we have.
Is it two claims?
Two claimants that are in excess, not by very much.
They're in excess, but what I'm saying is, how many more do we have that might hit that run, or is it pretty much over?
I don't have that.
Because that might be a couple. More than a couple.
Any other comments, questions, Mr. Rodriguez?
I do. In the discussion, they did mention the consistency of the plan. You had talked about this, the multiplier on the out-of-pocket max. There was no consistent measure when you're talking about going from, not out-of-pocket max, the individual deductible to the family deductible. That was an observation from the committee, suggesting that to make it a little easier to understand their contribution as well as their risk, understanding that it's a little bit more digestible if it's consistent, meaning if it's a pre-multiplier on basic, it's a pre-multiplier on standard as well as on premium. So that's my only suggestion, is that we look into that and see if that would make any difference. I'm not sure that it would make much of a difference. More so for if the employees are asking for this sort of consistency, why not give it to them?
What Mr. Medina is describing under the premium plan, or you can see under all of the plans, that there's an individual deductible and then there's a family limit, which is predominantly three times for the basic and the standard plan. The consumer-driven health plan, because of the magnitude of the deductible, is currently set at two, which is what most plan sponsors do, but that could also go to three. And then your premium plan, the deductible only increases by a factor of two for the family. So it wouldn't be a huge impact to a family under the premium plan, and you don't really have that many family members there because of the cost. But that would save another $100 for maybe 50 people, so that'd be about a $5,000 impact. Putting one of the objectives with the design of the consumer-driven health plan is to promote people to go in that direction. And the math is pretty overwhelming, and we've talked about that at length with the committees as well, that people that have family coverage in the premium plan could take the money that they save in contributions and put it into their health savings account and come out ahead of the game if they were to go ahead and switch to the consumer-driven health plan account. As opposed to just eliminating the premium plan altogether, because there were some people in the group, and I understand that different people have different perspectives and household budgets to contend with as well. And they're just not prepared to accept the risk that comes with a high deductible and co-pays. But with the proposed option number two, with the increase in deductions, the math becomes really overwhelming. And for people that have the discipline, that have been paying that much money into the plan already, to migrate to the consumer-driven health plan, and they have to weather the storm until they can fill up their health savings account bucket, to where they have, in essence, a war chest of funds to help subsidize their deductible going forward. But that's part of the strategy there, having two times the family limit, et cetera. And the difference in the payroll deductions is to move the risk in that direction. And when they do that, then they tend to become smarter consumers too. Right now, they basically can go to the doctor and get into the hospital and have a lot of procedures done with very little out-of-pocket cost, but they're paying a pretty significant portion through their payroll deductions.
Now, I'd like to move option two, and recommended by administration.
I'll second.
Still would like to see the analysis across the district.
Sure.
And may, Madam Chair, may I make another comment?
Yes.
Just a comment. I know that when I used to work, I no longer work, but they would also increase the premiums and without even a raise. So they would increase the premiums without giving us a raise. So I think this district is very privileged. The employees are very privileged to have this insurance.
Well, and the committee asked, if we did all these changes, how long would it last before we have to do things again? And I'd say, looking in hindsight, everybody's expectation is that things don't change very often. You've really been pretty sheltered from the rising cost of health care as it's reflected in your benefit plan design. So I'm reluctant to say more than 1 year, but looking historically, you've always had a good risk of people here. Every now and then there's going to be catastrophic claims. That's the nature of the beast, and that's why you have the insurance health program, the insurance to protect yourself from the catastrophic loss. But I think it would be foolish to stick your head in the sand and not accept the fact that there's increasing pressures on healthcare costs. And you see that in the news as more and more insurance carriers are opting out of the Affordable Care Act exchange. Right now, the average pace of inflation, I still would score an average about 7%. So hopefully with these changes, we'll encourage people to move closer to the consumer-driven health plan, or to the left on that grid. And with their behavioral changes, and with good just communications and plan management, and hopefully we can keep that in check for a couple of years.
So we have a motion and a second. Other questions or comments?
Thank you, Ren.
Thank you.
And I don't have the list of it, but we can get that for you and show you how many are in the pipeline, so to speak. It's still kind of early in the year for to have a good picture. And you're looking at the large claims data.
Yeah.
We're just 7 months into the year. You can see that historically they have 6 or 8 different claimants that exceed the deductible, or actually 7, I guess. Last year. So you're likely to get close to that threshold. I don't have that right at my fingertips here, but we can certainly provide it.
Thank you.
There was a motion and a second. More questions? Ms. Fritzy?
Yes.
Mrs. Gonzalez?
Yes.
Mr. Medina?
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mrs. Searles?
Yes.
And Mrs. Iglesias?
Yes.
Motion passes.
Thank you, Board. I have one clarification. Randy, could I ask you one other? Sorry to ask this afterwards. Do our employees, no matter what plan they have, get to go to the doctor and have preventive care?
Yes.
Or
yes.
Zero?
Yes.
Well, no. Our plan is currently have copays.
So you're going to have the copay. Obamacare is not going to pay.
Right. Your plans, as they are currently designed, have copays for preventive care. That's a change that you could change if you wanted to.
No, I just, that's okay. So there is a
copay. Preventive care is a covered benefit, yes.
Okay. Thank you.
I am, since we have Mr. Chambers here, we're going to do 5A, so.
That's okay.
Finally.
I'm sorry, we're not going to do 5A at last? Okay.
Yes.
5A. Report regarding the TASB 2016 Summer Leadership Institute Conference. Ms. Searles.
According to our policy, after we get in our training were to, you know, come back and share something with y'all. And it was wonderful. I always think the Summer Leadership Conference is truly one of the best. It's the most comprehensive and focused on Texas boards. I learned all kinds of wonderful things, legal class on public participation in and out of school board meetings. I found out there, and it really, it made me giggle, but they said, no, it's for real. You could file a grievance about the food in the cafeteria if you weren't happy with that.
Yeah, can you believe it?
I giggled on that one. I brought back papers I'd like to share with y'all if you'd like to them. See them. Talked about legal versus good practice and how sometimes good practice equals not ever having to have legal issues come up in the school districts. I also learned something, and Steve, it's against everything I've ever been taught, but legally they said that now at open forum, if you want to say something bad about somebody, you can say something bad about it, because it's the same about saying something good about it. And you don't have, they said it's an open forum. If you're allowing one, you need to allow the other.
With the exception of things that the education code requires be done in closed session.
Yeah, but
there are certain things that are still required.
You know, if somebody wanted to get up and say I was a rat, that would be fine. They could do that.
I guess
call
the school
me
board
out
members always can. Not against other employees.
Well, they said other employees too. If you can get up and say good. And I thought, oh, this is wholly new. So that was something I had never heard before, ever. Talked a lot about budget and the budget planning process, which we have just gone through in depth. And I hope that we'll use some of the things, you know, that we don't stop our budget process, that we use what we've got in place, but maybe even add to it, that we have a calendar, a budget calendar. They suggested you should have a finance committee, but we've got now our agenda review. To input our different collection methods, to look at budget reductions, and to also something that we haven't done in the galleries is a 5-year budget projection. I know that I hear Mr. Rodriguez say a lot of times, you know, it's going to look like in 5 years. And we never do go that far ahead. We look behind. It might be something to, you know, start to look at as we grow and as our taxes increase. How will our budget go along with that? So I also had a really awesome class by one of your old Round Rock people. His name was Bob. I'm sure there were a lot of Bobs in Round Rock. He's the COO, though. He was awesome. He talked about how leadership was not a popularity contest, that in his opinion, you're going to coach them up or coach them out. I like that. He set very high standards for his district, for the people who worked for him, and the children that were under them. And it was wonderful. One of his big mantras was no coasting allowed, that you were going to be driven and visionaries. And integrity and respect were paramount. And I think that those are things that, you know, we strive for as well. So I felt really good about that. And he also brought up, you can't be a destination district if you don't cross your T's and dot your I's. And I agree with that. I thought it was wonderful, and yet he also said failing was a great thing. It's a good thing to fail. It's your first attempt at trying. So if you fail, that meant you tried. So I hope, did y'all got a little something out of my, I didn't go too long ago. A little something out of my trip, and met the nice lady that was here, our state Board of Education lady, had some time to spend talking to her, which was nice, and also, you know, interacted with other board members from around the state, only to find out we have a huge state, as we all know. Everybody is spread far apart, yet our issues are all about the same. We're all serving children, and we all love children. So thank you very much for my little presentation there.
Thank you, Ms. Earls.
Madam Chair.
Go ahead.
During my sessions that I attended in Fort Worth, one of them was Employee Benefits 101, and I thought I was going to learn more when I attended this session because the individuals that had presented to us from TASB were here in the week before. And the names I said, Employee Benefits 101, I think it's like for someone that wants to hire them for their services, insurance. They begin from what the district can offer and what should be offering. So I wasn't too impressed with that one. The other one was SWAGA and Scholarship, the Black and Brown Male Press. This one was a good session as to what they offer, what the scholarships are available, but for minorities. So this was good too. The other one that I really was impressed was the general session with Consuelo Kickbush, and I believe they offered that one in also in San Antonio.
They did. She's awesome.
And she's very inspiring, and I wish we had brought her into our district this year for convocation.
I do too. Maybe she could come next year, Dr. Gallaby. She was spectacular.
She was.
Lieutenant Colonel Consuelo Kickbush.
From Loretta.
She kicks bush.
So these are some of the sessions that I was some of the many that I attended. So thank you.
Mr. Rodriguez, did you have
something? Yeah, I'll go next. So some of the sessions I actually got to attend both the Fort Worth and San Antonio, and I'll clarify that only the district paid for San Antonio before rumors go out there, which I've heard. The other thing is, one of the most important things is public advocacy, and one sessions that I attended talked about how Austin ISD and their intergovernmental affairs person was setting up the agenda and knowing what is coming up with the legislative pipeline, and pretty much building the relationship with our local state reps or senators. And so maybe we should invite both our state rep and our senator just to talk about the good that we're doing in our district and some of the issues that are not so good and how we need to address those issues, so that way they understand that when they go into the legislative session. The other, Consuela was really good as well as Steve. And so there were many good sessions, and that will conclude my report. So.
I guess I'm going to just talk about two of my favorite sessions were what trustees and school boards can do to advance opportunities in for women. I have a daughter at the high school, so of course that was very important to me, to make sure that we're providing as much technology and anything that as females they struggle out in the workforce, and to make them strong and effective leaders within their community and at school. So I found that very interesting. And then I also attended a study of school district response in violence, arming school district employees as part of a comprehensive safety plan. I've learned that a lot of Central Texas is actually utilizing a lot of more of the school marshals, and where they actually have administrators, teachers, and different staff members that actually have a concealed handgun license and have become school marshals in order not only to bring down costs, but are actually, if there is an active shooter situation, they're in the classroom versus on the outside. And that is it. Anybody else? Questions? Comments? So we will move on to
consent agenda?
Yes, ma'am. Consent agenda.
Item number 6, consent agenda. Administration recommends approval as presented.
Second.
Great. what did you just say?
So moved.
No, what did Sonia say?
Oh, okay. Consent agenda, administration recommends approval as presented.
I'd like to remove some items, please. I'd like to remove four.
Four?
No, four.
Just four?
Just four.
Four, eight, and ten.
Amend my motion.
I'll amend my second.
Oh, wait, and 21.
4, 8, 10, 21?
No, not 21. I'm
just
sorry.
4, 8, 10.
4, 8, and 10.
4, 8, and 10?
Yeah.
All right. So we had a first and a second. Excluding item 4, 8, and 10. Ms. Fritzi?
Yes.
Mrs. Gonzalez?
Yes.
Mr. Medina?
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mrs. Searles?
Yes.
Mrs. Iglesias?
Yes.
Motion passes. Item or number 4, warrant list for July 2016.
So, all I had for this was, and I, you know, I'm sorry, I'm such an anal personality that I do. I ask a question, and I've asked this for several months, about our electric bills at Reyes are really high. And so that's not the issue. The issue is that we got back an answer, and the minutes that supported the answer, it's not on you, Mr. Voskis, it's on the minutes were incorrect. I brought up that Reyes School received the Energy Conservation Challenge last year, and it didn't. Damian got the Energy Challenge Conservation Award. Yet our minutes reflect that it was Reyes. And so I just would like for us to change the minutes there on page 328 in our board packet that correctly identify the school that got it, because our minutes reflect that it's Reyes.
Yes, ma'am.
So that was, I believe, all that I wanted to discuss about that on number 4. So I move to approve with that the warrant list for July 2016.
Second.
Motion and a second. Ms. Fritzi?
Yes.
Mrs. Gonzalez?
Yes.
Mr. Medina?
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mrs. Searles?
Yes.
Mrs. Iglesias?
Yes.
Motion passes. Item number 8, approval of the School Health Advisory Council SHAC report.
So I wanted to bring up something. I always am the one who's asking and just beating the drum all the time. Dr. Galavis, where are our reports? What are our programs? BQ Legal, BQ Local. And I happened to ask about a comparison of our PRS and PEP program for the last 8 years. And look, we got this one sheet. Everybody see it? It's wonderful. These are how many pregnant students and pregnant related students that we've had in the past 8 years. We've cut that number in half. And I don't hear anybody excited about that. I'm excited about that. And I think that we need to be excited. To go from, in 2008, 46 students, to this year, 21, that is an amazing step up for all of these girls and boys, as the case may be. And I think that we need to recognize them, hopefully, in some way. I don't know how it's going to be Dr. Reyes's department, but they've done an awesome job, and their evaluation was so tiny and so self-evident. And the second half to that is it has been brought to my attention that they did this great job, and their one of their workers had to go away, was ripped. And I see that as a problem. When you're doing a great job, you should be supporting the very program that's doing a great job instead of taking something away from them. And I sure would like to see that made right. It's one of the ones that support this, I think, or the students support services. Employee was let go.
We'll find out.
Please, we'll
talk to the employee.
Because
talk to us first.
This, I mean, they deserve support when they've done such an awesome job. So, with that, I'd like to approve the School Health Advisory Council report.
And just before we approve that, Mr. Olson, I'd like to chime in. Actually, it's pretty much been the whole state of Texas as it went down teen pregnancy.
So. That is awesome. But, I mean, we were for years the highest in the county. And I don't know what the county looks like now, but I can see we're doing a great job. So it's awesome.
Related to the impound Pokemon Go. Distracting.
Motion passes. Item 10, approval of the amended and restated contract for the consolidated tax collection as presented by the City of El Paso Tax Office.
I had a question on this. In the backup that you gave us, it appeared that we get a $280,000 refund from the city on our taxes this year. Is that correct?
Can you tell us what page you're looking at?
Oh, probably.
106.
It was on the graph that was with it. They told about what everybody was going to get, and our number was. I'm so sorry. Well, maybe I haven't listened. And you know, you don't have to answer it now. Maybe if you could get back to us in the Thursday packet, it would be fine. Do you understand what I'm asking for?
I understand your question. I just don't remember seeing anything like that.
Okay.
So can we move to the next?
Yes, we can. So I move to approve, but if you could please
just make sure that Ms. Searles does get her question answered. Thank you.
We have a motion and a second?
Yes.
Ms. Fritzy?
Yes.
Mrs. Gonzalez?
Yes.
Excuse me, Mr. Medina?
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mrs. Searles?
Yes.
And Mrs. Iglesias?
Yes.
Motion passes.
Thank you.
Item number 7, new business, approval of meeting minutes.
Do we have any questions on any of 1, 2, 3, or 4?
I do.
Which one, Mrs.?
4.
Any questions on any of the above numbers? Well, no. So we're going to go ahead and move approve 1, 2, 3, and then Ms. Earls will ask for 4.
Second.
There was a motion and a second to approve 1, 2, and 3. Ms. Fritzy?
Yes.
Mrs. Gonzalez?
Yes.
Mr. Medina?
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mrs. Searles?
Yes.
And Mrs. Iglesias?
Yes.
Motion passes. Item number 4S, excuse me, 4S, special board meeting July 21st, 2016.
So, my question is, on July the 21st, we entered, no, that's not the question. Let me go to page 383. On July the 21st, we had a presentation, a really good presentation, by, I believe the company is called Gallagher.
Correct.
And they were to come in here. What they presented was to come to our district to do an audit of our pharmacy and our medical plan with the hopes of finding some discrepancies, and in so doing it would bring to us a financial return. Mm-hmm. And yet what was written did did not seem to reflect that. And so I was questioning.
Ms. Rose, I did have a question, and I had that conversation with our legal.
Yes.
And there are two agreements that were presented. There was the cooperative, and then there was additional services that we could also opt into. If our attorney felt comfortable with what we had signed.
That's the question, actually, that we talked to you about
the closed session.
So I just didn't feel that what we voted on really reflected what I thought we heard from. And I guess I have a problem with the minutes reflecting.
You can hold the minutes for now until we talk about
okay.
It.
That's fine, Ms. Wells. We can go ahead and hold the minutes for
perfect.
July the 21st and so that we can review them and make sure that they are correct and accurate.
And that was all. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Wells. So we'll move on to 7D.
Yes. Discussion and possible action regarding the 2016-17 Student Code of Conduct provided by the Texas Association of School Boards as mandated by Chapter 37 of the Texas Education Code.
Are there any questions on this item?
Of course.
Go ahead, Ms. Rose.
So, the other night when we had the, and I'm really sorry I've got to waste our time tonight, but we didn't have the answer to the question, which was extremely relevant. What was the color coding? The color coding meant it was local options. This has never been brought to us as a board or anybody else to decide on these questions that were color-coded, and I don't agree with what the options the administration chose to take, specifically the one where we will now take expelled children into our district. I'd like to reject the student code of conduct and have it brought back to the board in whatever format you see fit. But that where we do get to give our local input, that's what the color coding meant. It was never given to us as an option, and you know, I kind of feel insulted that it wasn't. So I'd like to have this moved to another agenda, please.
We have, I have questions. I mean, the students are in class already, and we don't even have a student code of conduct.
We didn't have a meeting in July.
Yeah, but I mean, we had. These issues could have been brought up
exactly
at the.
Actually, Mr. Rodriguez, I'll let Dr. Hale.
I have responses
two,
to some of
two mandates because you have a code of conduct that was initiated last year, so there's one still in play,
mm-hmm.
And there's only two,
it's 2 years
mandates
for every 2 years.
So, Ms. Searles, if I could address some of the questions that you had at the agenda review. Yes, the color coding was green, meant local input was required, such as filling in the district name, the superintendent's name on the template. They're turquoise and blue. The text should be kept, deleted, or moved to another section, or choose between two or more options. There was a question that you had about something that was highlighted in red. That was an additional highlight by Christine Hernandez, my assistant. It was her own coding to go back and review that item. So that's what was clarified. You had a question about the sex offenders, if we had any students that were sex offenders at our campus, and the answer is no, we do not. There was also some wording that we went back and we looked at policy FOD on expulsions, and so we have mimicked the wording in policy to read the hearing shall be conducted by the Board of Trustees or its designee. So we did go back and review that. But see, we don't have that in our board backup that you did anything to change what was from this original one on the agenda review.
But that's why we put it on a separate item. I mean, there's a reason why we have an agenda review. And
yeah, but when I asked the questions, they didn't have the answer. And if you don't know what the highlighting means, how can you respond? And
out there.
That's what I'm saying. I don't want to be talking about this now.
Well, that
should have been talked about then.
That's what we're here at a meeting for, is you ask those questions, they're being responsive, and now we address those questions. Now, if those questions or those answers didn't address your questions, then that's a different issue. But for us to just completely hold off on something when we have a process in place, I don't feel it's right. I'll make a motion to approve the 2016-2017 Student Code of Conduct provided by TASB as updated, as mandated by Chapter 37 of the Texas Education Code and as recommended by administration.
Second.
There's a motion and a second. Ms. Fritzi?
Yes.
Mrs. Gonzalez?
No.
Mr. Medina?
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana?
No.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mrs. Searles?
No.
Mrs. Iglesias?
Yes.
Motion passes.
Next item is 7F.
Madam Chair, just a comment. I think there needs to be a little bit more process-driven when we're talking about agenda review. Although this may not have been a perfect example, there should be a timely response by administration to board members in order to clarify any issues that were brought up during agenda review, whether it was addressed in a board packet or in person. I don't know if there's anything in writing or some sort of process that we need to follow, but it seemed as if we're not connecting, and the whole purpose of the board agenda review was really to answer those questions.
Right, and
it's obvious that some
if for some reason administration doesn't have answers right there and then they have over a week to get back to that board member so that that question is answered. And so that way, when we come here today, we're prepared to vote. That's why it's very important as our responsibility to do our homework and administration to make sure that they have our answers.
Who follows up on that? I guess that's my question. Who follows up on the questions? Is it Dr. Galavis? Is it you? Is there someone responsible to follow up on the questions that were not answered at the agenda review?
Madam Chair, if I might.
Well, if, for example, Ms. Searles, if let's say Ms. Searles' situation that happened today, it would be administration to call back Ms. Searles and say, Ms. Searles, this and this are my answers to you. Is there anything else that I can do? And so that way, that's why the process is 1 week. We have 1 week to get all our, pretty much our ducks in a row, so that when we're sitting here tonight, the process is much faster.
Madam Chair, what I want to add too is that whoever is requesting that needs to, if I'm going to request something, I would say, hey, please provide it in the Friday packet, or please bring it at the next, at the special board meeting. And so we need to clarify that as board members too.
That's what
and
I'm asking,
so,
what's the process?
Yeah.
What's the clear process?
Well, I think,
because something's obviously dropping, and the whole purpose, again, of board agenda review was to answer the questions in a timely manner, to be transparent to our community. And if a board member feels that they're not getting their questions answered, that they're a member of the community just as well. So I think there just needs to be an identified person to follow up and say, did you get your answer question? If not, then we just don't put it on the agenda, or we just move it off the agenda. It's just, that's the way it should go.
Okay, so we usually have our agenda review on Wednesday. We meet the following Tuesday. Would it be okay with the board if Dr. Galavis and, of course, to possibly Friday or Monday, call each board member and say, did you get all your answers? Are you prepared for Tuesday? Is there anything that I can do to ensure that you have everything that
you're I think most of the questions that aren't answered in the agenda review, those are easy. I don't think he needs to call every single board member, because I think it's very easy to find out who didn't get their answers questions, their questions answered, and just follow up with that board individual. I don't think we need to make busy work.
Well, I don't think we should make another layer. I think, you know, there's some issues that need, it could be in a Friday packet and we'll be okay with it, and there's some that don't.
It
so
didn't
I think,
happen. I guess that's what happened.
Yeah.
It didn't happen.
Well,
so
we meet Wednesday, so answers, and because really, Ms. Earls could be asking a question, but I could actually want the answer as well,
exactly.
Because that's something brought up. So
exactly.
maybe Wednesday, so then that means questions that were asked Wednesday should be in the upcoming packet, if possible. Hopefully we will, that should be enough time. And that would be a good way of communication. Of course, like everything else, we need to iron out those wrinkles. And most definitely, Friday would be, our Friday packet would be the ideal way, because
we
maybe all of us want that answer.
It's all a matter of communication. That's
right.
Right.
And thank you for that, Mr.
It's meant for Ms. Searles, but if it's meant for me, I wouldn't want all of you to know.
Yes,
as Ms. Searles would too.
Which is, I think, what
and
our
think,
board operating
procedures
say. Everybody gets it.
And I agree, and that's what was happening. I think what we needed to do was, you know, get the communication from administration, and if we didn't like that, then we go there. But, you know, before jump to
that way, we all have the same information.
No, I agree, which we all did have the same information. So we need to let administration respond and then ask if there's any more questions before we vote no or before we so.
Any more comments, questions? We're good? Okay.
Item F, discussion and possible action regarding a resolution to designate Casner Range as a national monument.
I so move.
Second.
There is a motion and a second. Ms. Fritzi?
Yes.
Mrs. Gonzalez?
Yes.
Mr. Medina?
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana?
Yes.
Ms. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mrs. Searles?
Ms. Searles?
Yes.
And Mrs. Iglesias?
Yes.
Motion passes. Item number G, discussion and possible action regarding the designation of two CISD Financial Services Department accountants as authorized representatives for the investment responsibilities on behalf of CISD. Ms. Bavarsky?
I move to approve.
Second.
There is a motion and a second. Ms. Fritzi?
Yes.
Mrs. Gonzalez?
Yes.
Mr. Medina?
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mrs. Searles?
Yes.
And Mrs. Iglesias?
Yes.
Motion passes. It is now 8:10. Item number 8. Executive session. The meeting is proposed under Texas Government Code Section 551.071, 551.072, and 551.074. A discussion regarding possible sale of the owned property. In addition to 7B, legal issues.
Maybe Mr.
Bill.
Maybe I'll just.
Thank you.
Will you take this over here?